This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
House Judiciary will now come to order. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Allward.
Here.
Barthel.
Here.
Schwach.
Here.
Odenbach.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Fischke.
Present.
Fourier.
Excused.
Rehfeldt.
Here.
Reimer.
Here.
Soy.
Here.
St. John.
Here.
Stevens.
Here.
Hansen.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. We do have a quorum. The chair will entertain a motion to approve the minutes of our last House Judiciary Committee meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Stevens, seconded by Barthel. Any comments on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. Welcome, everybody, to the House Judiciary Committee. We have a few, We have a few interns, or pages, I should say, that we'd like to have introduced real quick before we begin. So if you would both please come up to the microphone, tell us your name, where you're from, and what you're thinking about doing after high school.
So my name is Caden Bundy. I'm from Garrettson, and I plan to go to SDSU for ag business.
My name is Kennedy Buchneberg, and I also go to Garrettson, and I plan to attend Minnesota West in Worthington, Minnesota next year.
All right. Thank you both for being here very much. I will note they are from the greatest district in all of South Dakota.
The greatest district.
The greatest district, District 25, so welcome to you both. For those attending today, please remember to silence your electronic devices. If you wish to testify, you're welcome to do so. But please remember to sign in at the podium in the back. All questions and comments should flow through the chair. And if you have any handouts, you are welcome to have them distributed. Just feel free to ask our pages and they'll help you out with that. We have four bills on the agenda for today. We're going to take them in the order that they appear on the agenda. So first up today before the Judiciary Committee is House Bill 1071. Which is an act to correct incorrect cross-references dealing with crimes and criminal procedures and repeal an obsolete section. The committee will now hear proponent testimony on House Bill 1071. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I am Katie Haruska, and I am the Deputy General Counsel for the Governor's Office, and I am here asking for your support of 1071. 1071 is a simple cleanup bill that updates three sections of our code that have cross-references to statutes that no longer exist. But before I get into the specifics of the bill, I wanted to explain a little bit about how this bill is coming before you today and why you are hearing from me. After the governor's vetoes of House Bill 1012 and 1013 were sustained last year, the administration got to work to carry out the good intentions of those bills and to clean up bad cross-references in our code. With the help of LRC, who provided us their report that identified all the incorrect statutes throughout our 62 titles of the code, all the agencies got to work together and divided those sections among the experts in those areas to research those errors and determine what updates were appropriate. In some cases, the changes would be very simple, or a typo was simply found. In others, the change would have been would be substantive. And for others, it was determined that the statute itself was simply obsolete and could be repealed. The agencies and their attorneys reached out and worked with many others. In total, this project has resulted in 26 proposed bills. 15 executive branch agencies were involved, and other agencies helped out as well, including the Unified Judicial System, the Public Utility Commission, and the Secretary of State's office. The County Association and the Sheriff's Association were also on board and have filed legislation as well. If all the proposals are approved, the legislature will be updating 163 sections that have bad cross-references and repealing 27 sections. So now to the bill itself. Section 1 fixes an error that dates back to 1986 that relates to allowing victims' families to be present during a jury trial in certain circumstances. The statute that's being struck, 1949-29, is actually just a typo back in 1986. That provision never existed. It should have read 1914-29, which was a sequestration statute that excluded from the sequestration a victim of a crime and his parent or guardian following the victim's testimony. Then in 2016, when all the rules of evidence were transferred into Chapter 1919, this cross-reference was not picked up, probably because of this typo. In Section 2, we are fixing an error that dates back to 1989. Section 60.10.13 was simply repealed and replaced then with 60.10.13.1. Section 2 simply makes that update. And as is suggested from LRC, Section 3 repeals an unnecessary severability clause, which also references that now repealed section of 60.10.13. If you look at the drafting manual, severability clauses are frequently encountered in laws of other states, but in South Dakota, we typically don't have them. Instead, severability is a long-established doctrine of the Supreme Court of South Dakota. It's also sometimes called the doctrine of separability. And our courts are required to uphold all parts of the legislative measure that can stand on its own without the part that is unconstitutional. So Section 3 strikes that severability clause. It's not needed. And with that, I ask for your favorable vote on 1071. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Ruska. For the proponent testimony in House Bill 1071, are there any more proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Any opponents to House Bill 1071? Seeing no opponent testimony, we'll open to questions from the committee. Are there any committee questions? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for the sponsor. Hi, thanks for being here. You had mentioned that you took what LRC had done and gave it to the agencies, and then they examined it to see if, you know, what made sense and that kind of thing. So in this particular one, did you find more than the LRC had recommended, or did you find less? How does that compare to what was originally proposed?
So what was when you're sorry, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Representative Peterson, when you're asking what was originally proposed, do you mean House Bill 1012?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
I think that was the number. Thanks.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And so the process was to go through an LRC report and not the House Bill 1012 or 1013. And so the report had identified many, many, many more than what House Bill 1012 from last year had originally been drafted. And so there are some statutes that may be being updated this year that may not have been included in 1012 or vice versa. And so after this session, I hope that we can work with LRC and figure out what statutes were missed, and we can continue to work through and update those.
Follow up, Representative Peterson.
Thank you. So I guess maybe I asked maybe not exactly the right question, but if you use the LRC report as a guide, then you're saying that this year you're fixing some of what's there and then what they had suggested in that report, and then maybe next year you'll take a look at the rest of it? Or did you take everything that was in that report and convert it to bills?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Ruska.
I'd have to look at my spreadsheet to be able to very accurately answer your question. But there are some sections of the code that were identified in the LRC report that will not be addressed this year. There will be some, and we'll have to work through what those were. I'll also say that the LRC report identified many sections that aren't errors, that they refer to a subsection. And so the hyperlink may not have may not be wrong, but the report would have identified it as being wrong.
Follow up?
Good, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee? Are there any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Ruska. We'll now open to committee discussion or action on House Bill 1071.
Move due pass on House Bill 1071.
Representative Stevens moves due pass on House Bill 1071. That's been seconded by Representative Peterson. Comments on the motion, Representative Stevens?
No, I think the
I believe that the explanation is very well done, and we just need to move on.
Thank you. Further comments on the motion? Seeing no further comments, the motion before the committee is to send House Bill 1071 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. All those in favor of that motion will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Allward?
Aye.
Barthel?
Aye.
Schwach?
Aye.
Odenbach?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Pischke?
Aye.
Poirier, excused. Rehfeld?
Aye.
Reimer?
Aye.
Soy?
Aye.
St. John?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
We have 12 yeas, 0 nay.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. That motion carries. House Bill 1071 will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Would there be any objection to placing that on the consent calendar? All right. Seeing no objection, the chair will certify House Bill 1071 as uncontested and place it on the consent calendar. We will move then in our agenda to House Bill 1068. House Bill 1068, an act to revise the requirements for written findings of facts and conclusions in certain judicial proceedings involving a child. The committee will now hear proponent testimony on House Bill 1068. Welcome back, Mr. Satizon.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Greg Satizon, State Court Administrator for the Unified Judicial System. And Mr. Chair, there's an amendment to the bill that was submitted. It's 1068A. With your permission, I'd speak to the amendment and the bill.
Please do. And that is posted on the LRC website, so if you haven't seen that yet, it is on the LRC page. Please proceed.
Thank you. House Bill 1068 is brought by the Unified Judicial System at the request of our judges statewide to help clarify when certain written findings of fact and conclusions of law are necessitated. So I'll just step back for a minute. So findings of fact and conclusions of law, essentially what that is that's the written statements where a judge is resolving factual disputes and deciding what version they believe. And so that is where if there's a dispute between A and B, the judge will pick A or B, and that'll be set forth as the finding of the court. And then that will inform what their conclusions of law are. So if you think of the math formula that might be involved, if you have this finding, you apply the law, then that would be the judge's conclusion of law. So it's really the way the judge explains how they're reaching the decision they did. And so, you know, that's extremely important in many cases. What this bill is about is which cases we don't believe that that's as important or as necessary. And so this clarification really applies to two situations. And that is in Chin's cases, which is a child in need of supervision, where they admit to the petition. So they're admitting to the facts of the case. A good example of that in a Chin's case would be a truancy case. If the kid would come in and admit, yes, I was absent for school on these dates, you know, at that point, the way current law reads, the court has to enter findings and conclusions and do so in writing to say, I find that you missed school on these days, there was no valid excuse, there was no, you know, healthcare note, anything like that. And then they would conclude the child was a truant under South Dakota law. And so when you think about that, that process, when you require that to be in writing, the way findings and conclusions works is the state's attorney will be asked to draft those. 10 days is typical, and that's business days. And then the defense attorney has 5 days to review those, and that's another week. So essentially, the kid admits to being truant. We take 3 weeks to issue the written findings that they were truant before we're going to be able to dispose of the case and place that youth on probation or whatever the sentence would look like. So while it seems fairly minor, we think it makes a sense in that it speeds up the process. This would also apply for delinquency cases as well. So a delinquency case would be something that's illegal conduct that a juvenile does. So a simple assault, petty theft, intentional damage to property under $400, something like that. And this is really, and you'll see from the language we use, it's only intended to apply in two instances, cases where there is no contested evidentiary hearing, which means there's no facts to resolve, so why does the court need to go in and decide? I find this to be the facts, if everyone agrees on the facts. But the way the statute is written, that is required. The other instance that would be required is if the Department of Corrections is a disposition involved in the case, or potentially involved in the case for an adjudication. And so what that means is, even if someone came in and admitted and that juvenile said, I admit to aggravated assault, if the court, the state's attorney, someone is considering a placement in the Department of Corrections, findings are still required just because of the magnitude of that decision, where you would physically remove that child from their community and place them under the custody of the Department of Corrections. So even if it's admitted, we think that that's appropriate for the court to have those written findings and conclusions. And so what we specifically exempt, that's also dealt with in the statute, is abuse and neglect cases. Abuse and neglect cases, I think, are exempted for a good reason. One, multiple parties are involved. You have the lawyer and the lawyer's attorney. You have parents, and they may have individual attorneys as well. And so even if at a certain point it feels like they're moving toward an admission, there's so many divergent interests there and things to resolve that it really becomes too complicated. And so very clearly want to make sure that this does not apply to those abuse and neglect cases. So that's the intent, and that's the reasoning, and why we think that this targeted change makes sense to really keep those proceedings moving. And, you know, in the event that there ever is a concern, just because the fact that there's not written findings and conclusions does not necessarily mean the record is not reviewable. The judge will have those statements in the record that's maintained by the court reporter of how they disposed of the case. There's going to be an order of adjudication or order of disposition, so it'll be pretty clear and evident from the record why the case was handled the way it was. So with those safeguards, we think that that makes sense, and I'll certainly stand by for any questions.
Thank you, sir. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1068. Welcome, Mr. Bichand.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Bichand. I realize it's my first time here this session. I'm an attorney here in Pierre, and I'm also the head of the State's Attorneys Association. We support House Bill 1068. We think it's a great cleanup as to unnecessary paperwork. Let me hit just one thing, because it typically is then your state's attorney who will prepare the paperwork, as it would sit now, to make these written findings and conclusions. That also necessitates, oftentimes, when we have court-appointed counsel, then to do that similarly, to object to the findings or propose their own. This does simplify it. It simplifies it in only those cases for a CHINS, a child in need of supervision, or a juvenile delinquency, if little Johnny commits a simple assault or disorderly conduct, and comes in and admits, then we're saying with this piece of legislation, you don't have to prepare and make those written findings and conclusions. What it does not mean, though, is still in those situations where Paul's daughter, Sarah, caught drinking, has to come to court and is admitting, the judge will say, tell me what happened. In other words, the judge still has to find that there is what we call a factual basis for what the child is admitting to. That doesn't go away. This simply cleans up some paperwork requirement. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, sir. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1068. Are there any more proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Opponents to 1068. Seeing no opponents, we will move to committee questions. Are there any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pischke.
Question for Mr. Satizon. Can you give a committee an estimate of how many CHINS cases or how many juvenile delinquency cases that this would apply to, like, for example, in the state of South Dakota for a given year, if you can estimate?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Satizon.
This is a very rough estimate. It would probably, in my mind, be in the neighborhood of 150 to 200 cases out of what I would imagine would probably be close to 700 to 800 cases. Statewide, I think it'd probably be about that, and that's just a pure kind of feel guess, so don't hold me to that.
Okay, thank you.
Follow up?
Another question. I have some concerns. Anytime we're removing this level of transparency, so to speak, in the judicial branch, that that we're removing that transparency. You made the comment about it'd still be written and spoken into the record, and that would be basically the findings of facts in that nature. But doesn't it, is it difficult to acquire that transcript? And it just seems like this might make it harder for there to be more transparency in this in these cases. Can you speak to that?
Sure, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sadezon.
And certainly that's not our goal, is to make anything less transparent. And so, you know, if there ever is a question, and typically what's most relevant is going to be the order where the judge enters to find, you know, here's what I found the conduct was, here's what the consequences are, the sentence. And so all that information will be clearly spelled out. And in my opinion, if I looked at an order of adjudication and an order of disposition, I would be able to tell pretty clearly what was happening in that case. So I really think, because there's not disputes to resolve about, you know, in a truancy case, what days was the kid gone from school? Is that relevant or not? That's really what those findings are going to be focused on, not just the general, the child didn't comply with the truancy laws. And so I think you'll be able to figure that out pretty quickly just by what is available. Obviously, you can order a transcript, but of course, to get a transcript, you do have to pay the costs associated with the transcript. And so, you know, that's not an easy process. I'll certainly admit that. But I do think that from what is contained in the record, especially in a case where you're admitting to the facts, it's going to be pretty clear as to what's happening there. So I don't feel like we're losing a lot in that. And so that'd be my response.
Follow-up? Further questions? Representative Schwach.
Yeah. I wanted to understand how, I guess, an oral finding of fact and conclusion of law would interact with our, you know, notice of entry of order requirements that, you know, starts an appeal, the appeal process.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Sazon.
Yep. I can attempt to shed some light on that. So, just for a little bit of background. So when a judge is deciding how they're going to handle the case and they're really explaining the reasoning, and that's done for a number of reasons. One, if you have a juvenile in front of you that's committed an infraction, the judge wants to convey sort of the solemnity. They want to make it seem like a big deal when they have them in front of them. And so as part of that, they're really going to explain, here's what you admitted to, here's what the law is, here's what I'm, you know, here's going to be the consequence, whether it's probation, and they'll set forth that reasoning in the record. And a lot of times they do that for the, you know, to make sure everyone's clear in the courtroom, and also to really reinforce that to that juvenile offender, or this happens in adult court as well. And so as they do that, they create that oral record of what the case is. And then after that, the order is entered. And so if a party wishes to challenge a case, then their time begins to expire from the notice of entry of that order. And so really what that means is once I'm served a copy of what the order is in that case, so if it's a judgment saying that I, you know, committed this, I'll just use truancy because that's what I've been using as my example, I now have 30 days to decide if I want to appeal that. If you recall from last week, everyone in our state has the right to appeal a decision. The time doesn't start to run until you've received notice of entry, which really makes a lot of sense. If you don't know the court's result, you can't appeal it. And so that's a formal process. It's a document. Many times it's served by mail. Sometimes it might be served more formally, just depending on the nature of the relationship and if you're represented by counsel or not. But that starts the appeal deadline. The findings and conclusions do not start the notice of entry. Only the order is going to start the notice of entry. So in my mind, this change would not have any impact on how notice of entry would be calculated. And I recognize sometimes I give very long answers to a short question, so I appreciate your indulgence.
Follow up? Further committee questions? Representative Odenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to clarify, there's going to be a transcript of these proceedings where the judge has orally said what he's heard today and that they've admitted that you're truant or whatever it is. And so if they then get the notice of entry of order and their time frame starts to appeal, they can order the transcript and use that on appeal to the Supreme Court. If there is, you know, a contest about what may or may not happen or why the kid wasn't in school or whatever the case may be. Can you just address that, please?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sadezon.
Representative, that's Exactly right. There would be that mechanism should there be an appeal. I would just tell you it's extremely rare to see an appeal after a person has admitted to guilt, just for obvious reasons. A lot of times appeals would be unrelated to that, and particularly in those cases where you have findings and conclusions, that is meant to help the court with an appeal. So that's why this, you know, is really tried to target at those cases where we recognize that's not happening a lot, if ever. I really can't, and I worked for the court and as an appellate staff attorney for 8 years, I cannot remember a single case where a person admitted to a petition and then appealed that admission. Is it possible? Yes. Is it practical? Not really. So I hope that answers that question.
Follow-up? Further committee questions. Representative Schwach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I want to understand what this bill is doing just a little bit clearer, because one of the reasons I withdraw my question. I was reading the amendment backwards, so thanks.
No problem. Questions from the committee. Are there any further questions? Seeing no further questions, thank you, Mr. Satizan. We will move to committee discussion or action. Remember, there is an amendment, 1068A.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Peterson.
I move the amendment 1068A.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Representative Peterson, seconded by Representative Stevens to amend 1068 with amendment 1068A. Any comments on the motion, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a number of questions on this bill as it was originally written, and I contacted Mr. Satizan, and we talked through those and worked through those. And I really appreciate him making the amendment and clarifying it, and it satisfied my concerns. So I would ask you to support the amendment and the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion on the motion to amend? Seeing no further discussion, the motion before the committee is to amend House Bill 1068 with Amendment 1068A. This is a voice vote. All those in favor of that motion will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The bill is so amended. We are now on the bill as amended. Discussion or action?
I'd move to pass the 1068
motion, as amended. Motion made by Representative Stevens, seconded by Representative Rehfeldt to do pass 1068 as amended. Discussion on the motion, Representative Stevens.
You know, this bill really just is a very limited in its scope, in as much as we're only talking about uncontested matters. And so, consequently, the necessity of findings of facts and conclusions or law are designed so that if somebody's going to appeal their case, then the Supreme Court has the opportunity to look at those specific findings that the court has made in order to arrive at its conclusions of law and then to enter its order. And so in this situation here, and I've handled a lot of them, you know, when you have a situation where the parties come in and they've already agreed that this is what has happened and generally what the result is going to be, it's really unnecessary to go through that process to do the findings of fact and conclusions of law. You need to also remember, too, that when, as far as being concerned about the transparency, any juvenile matter is held in private. It's just the parents and the child that is there. There, in all cases, there's a transcript of everything that's said, who's there, who testified, what the information is. So there is a record in case somebody in those rare occasions, and I've only seen that where somebody's entered a stipulation to that or agreed that they were guilty of this or that, is only after the judge has entered an order and they don't like the result. Then they could possibly say, well, they didn't understand it or something like that. But we're talking about such a minuscule amount. So what this is really doing is handling those situations where there is no contested matter. And all other matters that are contested, findings of fact, conclusions, law, oral findings are made by the court. And so this is a very limited in its scope, and I think that's why that's appropriate. And so I'd encourage your support of the bill.
Thank you, sir. Further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pischke.
Representative Stevens, I thank you for your words. I think you just changed me from a no to a yes.
Wow, teach us your ways.
I have
We agree on so many things.
All right. Further discussion on the do pass as amended motion. Seeing no further discussion, the motion before the committee is to send House Bill 1068 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. All those in favor of that motion will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Allwood?
Aye.
Barthel?
Aye.
Schwach?
Aye.
Odenbach?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Pischke?
Aye.
Courier excused. Rehfeld?
Aye.
Reimer?
Aye.
Soy?
Aye.
St. John?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
We have 12 yay, 0 nay.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. That motion carries. House Bill 1068, as amended, will go to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any objection to consent calendar? Seeing no objection, the chair will certify this bill is uncontested and place it on the consent calendar. We will move in our agenda to House Bill 1069. House Bill 1069, an act to modify the expenditures that are recoverable as disbursements by a prevailing party in a civil action or a special proceeding. The committee will hear proponent testimony on House Bill 1069. Mr. Satizon.
Good morning again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Greg Satizon, the State Court Administrator for the Unified Judicial System. So House Bill 1079 is brought by the Unified Judicial System to really address how language interpreters are paid in civil cases in South Dakota. So current law indicates that in a civil action, it's really the responsibility of the parties to line up and pay for their own interpreter. Then, should you win the case, you can have those costs essentially reimbursed or taxed against the other party to the proceeding to pay you back, which means if you win, there's an opportunity for that reimbursement. In that civil case, if you don't win, then you're going to be on the hook for the interpreter fees. And so when you think about that and you think about civil proceedings, those are going to be things that are significant. And so that might be a child custody proceeding. It might be a small claims court. It might be a landlord-tenant eviction proceeding, a car accident, hospital bills. There's a whole lot that really means. And so our concern is that by making that the expense of the party to bring the proceeding, that we may be creating a burden on that individual to come to the courts and either respond to a civil proceeding or initiate a civil proceeding when they feel like they have rights that need to be protected. And so that's really what this bill is about, is how do we address this? And so I think it's important to understand the landscape behind this bill. Criminal cases, an interpreter is always provided upon request, and that's paid for by the county. In a civil case, if it's an ADA interpreter, so if you're deaf or hard of hearing, that interpreter has to be provided by the court system so you can meaningfully participate in your court case. That is paid by the UJS. Now, if you speak Spanish, Arabic, whatever your language that you're comfortable with, and you need a language interpreter right now, that's your responsibility to pay. That's a shift. And up until April of 2019, and this is, I'll just be candid, this is driven by Minnehaha County. Up until April of 2019, Minnehaha County paid for civil interpreters in proceedings. They essentially at that point looked at the law and said, we don't have an obligation to pay for this. It's either the party's responsibility or it's the Unified Judicial System's responsibility. And based on the current law, it's the party's responsibility. Now that has been a position that's been advocated in other states, that it's the party's responsibility. I would tell you that the Department of Justice in those states views that as an impermissible surcharge that constitutes language and national origin discrimination. And so, at that point, we're really talking about whose responsibility this is. And so what we think the best way to resolve this is to make it very clear it is not the party's responsibility to pay for their own interpreter so they can meaningfully participate in their proceeding. And that's really what this bill does. And so obviously that has a budget consequence. So the Unified Judicial System made an ask during the budget cycle for $50,000 to cover these expenses statewide. That is in the governor's recommended budget, and so that'll be part of our budget hearing on February 5th, and I'm hoping that that works in conjunction because the two things are meant to come together. And so this would, while I mentioned Minnehaha County specifically because last year alone there were 45 different language interpreters involved. Those are different languages in 2,598 separate proceedings. That is the vast majority of interpreted cases in our state. There's pockets of other ones. You may have a Spanish interpreter in Huron, a Hmong interpreter, whatever it might be, in different areas. But more than 90% of all the need for interpreters is in Minnehaha County right now. And their policy change really forced the court system to try to adapt to how do we move forward with this. And so this solution proposed by House Bill 1069 is strike out the language that says interpreters are taxed as costs, because at that point, that says really you have to pay for it yourself. And then if you win, you might get it paid back. If not, you know, it's your responsibility. And then in conjunction with the budget request, that would now become a unified judicial system state responsibility, so that this issue is dealt with the same way across all counties. And right now it's a checkerboard. Minnehaha County, I told you their policy change. Lincoln County still pays for interpreters in civil cases as a county expense. Many cases, I think of Rapid City, a lot of times they have language services made available through Ellsworth Air Force Base. The commander views that as part of their responsibility to the community, and so they will send their interpreters to help individuals upon request. Sometimes it might be other individuals in the community that have volunteered to do it, and so it's all over the place, needless to say. And so what we're really looking for here is certainty and a funding source, and so that's what this bill is about and meant to clarify. So I appreciate your attention, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you very much. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 1069. Are there any further proponents? Seeing none, we will now hear opponent testimony on House Bill 1069. Are there any opponents? Seeing no opponents, we will move to committee questions. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Aylward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cetizan. So correct me if I'm wrong. Right now it's left up to the counties and how they want to handle it.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
All right. Thank you.
Further committee questions? Seeing no question? Okay. Seeing no questions, we'll move to committee discussion or action on House Bill 1069. Discussion or action.
Sure.
Representative Pischke.
I would move to pass.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Representative Pischke, seconded by Representative Rehfeld, to send House Bill 1069 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Comments on your motion, Representative Pischke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just commend Mr. Cetizan for pitching the bill well, explaining it well, and I think it's a good piece of legislation. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Further comments on the due pass motion? Seeing none, the question before the committee is whether to send House Bill 1069 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. All those in favor of that motion will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Allward?
No.
Barthel?
Aye.
Schwach?
Aye.
Odenbach?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Pischke?
Aye.
Poirier excused. Rehfeld?
Aye.
Reimer?
Aye.
Soy?
Aye.
St. John?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
We have an 11 yeas, 1 nay.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. That motion carries. House Bill 1069 will go to the floor with the due pass recommendation. We will move to our final bill on the agenda, House Bill 1070. House Bill 1070 enacts to revise certain provisions regarding the unified judicial system. The committee will hear proponent testimony on House Bill 1070. Mr. Cetizan.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, Greg Cetizan, Unified Judicial System. House Bill 1070 is really a counterpart to what Ms. Haruska had talked about earlier as part of the statutory cleanup initiative. And so I'll just briefly go through the bill. I'll just start out by saying there are no substantive changes in this bill. This is really a pure cleanup bill. And so if you look at Section 1, it removes a reference to 1612A-1. That provision was repealed back in 2003, and it was replaced with 1612A-1.1, so we're really just making sure we've got the right code site there. In Section 2, again, the reference to standards established for the compensation of court personnel and references in 16223, that was repealed in 2012, and when that was repealed in 2012, it really is because there are no references or standards established pursuant to that provisions. Those employees' salaries and compensation are fixed as part of the UJS budget. That really is antiquated language that went back to the days of pre-unification of the court system. Section 3 removes a reference to 1612A22. That again was repealed back in 2003, and it was replaced with 1612B11. And so not a substantive change, just a recodification and reorganization. And so that clears up that site. Section 4 removes the reference to 23A2012. That was repealed back in 1999 and was replaced at that time with 23A20-13.1. So a similar cleanup there. And then lastly, in Section 5, the reference to 153959 was repealed in 2000, back when the magistrate court chapter was completely rewritten, and that was recodified at 153957. And so that, again, just replaces and cleans up that site. So very technical bill, making sure that when you're doing your legal research and you click on a link, you actually get to a bill that currently exists. And so that's the intent of the change, and appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there any further proponent testimony? Any further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Any opponents to House Bill 1070? Seeing no opponents, we'll move to committee questions. Are there any questions from the committee? Any questions? Seeing no committee questions, we'll move to committee discussion or action on House Bill 1070. Discussion or action?
I move to pass on House Bill.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Representative Stevens, seconded by Representative Schwach, to send House Bill 1070 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Vice Chairs, what can I say? Any comments on the motion?
No, it's clearly a cleanup bill and necessary. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion on the due pass motion? Seeing none, the motion before the committee is to send House Bill 1070 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. All those in favor of that motion will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Allward?
Aye.
Barthel?
Aye.
Schwach?
Aye.
Odenbach?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Pischke?
Aye.
Poirier, excused. Rehfeld?
Aye.
Reimer?
Aye.
Soy?
Aye.
St. John?
Aye.
Stevens?
Aye.
Hansen?
Aye.
We have 12 yay, 0 nay.
That motion carries. House Bill 1070 will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. That concludes the committee's... Oh,
Mr. Chair.
1 second. Yes.
Consent?
Yes. Any objection to consent? Seeing none, the chair will certify that for the consent calendar. Thank you, Representative Pischke. That concludes our agenda for today. Thank you, committee, for your work. We'll see you next time. The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion.
Move by Representative Soy. Seconded by Representative Peterson. All those in favor of that motion will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. We are adjourned.